Ever get that feeling like you're stuck paying for someone else's mistakes? You know, like that old saying about the parents eating sour grapes and the kids getting the toothache. Well, today we're going deep on that. We're diving into Ezekiel chapter 18.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, we're going to see what it has to say about, you know, that feeling of being held back by the past, whether it's yours or someone else's. And we're going to be looking at it through a lecture by Dr. Leslie Allen. We're going to be uncovering some of the themes of, you know, personal responsibility and hope, second chances, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating how this chapter just pops up right in the middle of all these prophecies about kings and kingdoms.
Right.
It's like hitting pause on a big historical drama for a moment of personal reflection.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sudden zoom in, you know, going from that epic scale down to something really personal. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think to understand that, we really need to think about the context. So Ezekiel was speaking to the Israelites while they were in exile in Babylon after Jerusalem fell in 587 BCE.
Right.
And you have to imagine, you know, their whole world had been turned upside down, their home, the temple, everything they knew was gone. And they were living in a foreign land surrounded by people who didn't share their beliefs.
Yeah.
It was traumatic. And they were dealing with, you know, really intense feelings of despair, hopelessness.
Like they were handed this plate of sour grapes that they never asked for, and now they had to deal with the consequences, choices that weren't even theirs to make.
Exactly. And that proverb, that image of the parents eating sour grapes and the children's teeth being set on edge, it really captures their frustration perfectly. They're essentially asking, you know, why are we suffering for the sins of our ancestors? Like, is this even fair?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, it's like they felt trapped by the past, like their future was already written for them because of what had happened before, you know? It's pretty heavy stuff.
It is. And that's where Ezekiel, this priest prophet, he steps in with a pretty radical message.
Okay, so what does he say? Does he like try to explain why they're going through all of this?
He actually does more than that. He basically tells them, you know, look, that old proverb, forget about it. We're starting fresh. So instead of focusing on this inherited guilt, he really emphasizes personal accountability and the possibility of a fresh start, regardless of what came before.
So no more blaming grandma for your bad luck, huh? You're responsible for your own choices, even if you're dealing with the consequences of someone else's actions.
That's exactly right. He's basically saying that each generation has to stand on its own merit. It's a pretty powerful shift, you know, moving away from that idea of being punished for the sins of your parents, your grandparents.
Wait, so before this, people actually believed that they were being punished for things their ancestors did.
Yeah, that was a pretty common belief back then. But Ezekiel, he challenges that. He says, and I'm quoting here, "It's only the person who sins that shall die, the soul who sins shall die. The son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him." So yeah, this whole emphasis on individual responsibility before God, it was a game changer.
Wow, so he's really turning things upside down. But what about the people who messed up in the past? Do they get a do-over?
That's where repentance comes in. Ezekiel is very clear. When someone turns away from their wrongdoing and chooses a righteous path, God doesn't hold their past against them. It's a total refit, like hit the refresh button on your life.
So it's not just about avoiding your ancestors' mistakes. It's about making sure that your own actions are, you know, lining up with what's right, even if you've messed up before.
Exactly. And actually, this whole idea of each person being accountable for their own actions, it was already there in their law.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Deuteronomy 24.16, it states that individuals should only be punished for their own crimes, not the crimes of their parents.
So Ezekiel is drawing on like existing ideas, but he's really bringing them to the forefront in a new way. He's giving them hope at a time when hope probably felt really hard to come by.
Exactly. And he doesn't stop there. He goes on to give them this blueprint for how to live this new way, how to make the most of this fresh start.
Okay, so what does this blueprint look like? Does he like hand them a chisel and say, "All right, time to build a new you"?
Well, not exactly. He gives them concrete examples of what righteous living actually looks like.
Okay.
Things like avoiding idolatry, respecting sacred spaces, treating others fairly. But it's not just about outward actions, it's about a change of heart.
Okay.
It's like he's saying, look, here's how to cultivate a life that reflects a transformed heart, a heart that's in tune with God's values.
So it's about aligning your inner world with your actions, your outer actions.
Yeah.
And I guess that makes sense, right? If you're truly changed on the inside, it's going to show up in how you treat other people, how you live your life.
Yeah.
But what about the people who are already living righteous lives? What's in it for them?
That's where Ezekiel talks about this kind of screening process that will happen when they return to their homeland. So those who have truly repented and lived righteously will be separated from those who continue to rebel against God.
Okay.
It's a pretty powerful image of God, you know, sorting things out and making sure that justice prevails.
So it's not just a free-for-all where everyone gets a pass. There are still consequences for choices. But there's also this amazing opportunity for forgiveness and a fresh start.
Exactly. And for those who are already living righteously, it's this affirmation that they're on the right path, that their choices matter, and that their faithfulness won't go unnoticed.
Okay, this is already a lot to unpack, but I'm curious, what are some of the specific things Ezekiel tells them to do to live this new way? What does this righteous living actually look like? So last time we were talking about Ezekiel laying down this challenge, no more blaming past generations. It's time for a fresh start, a new way of living. But what did that actually look like for them, you know, being stuck in exile in Babylon?
Well, it's interesting because Ezekiel doesn't just give them the set rules and say, good luck, you know.
Right.
He actually gives them concrete examples of what righteous living looks like, stuff drawn from their existing laws and traditions.
Okay, give me an example. What were some of the things he told them to focus on?
He emphasized things like respecting sacred spaces, avoiding adultery, practicing justice by not oppressing others, returning pledged items to debtors, and even, get this, offering interest-free loans as acts of kindness.
Wait, interest-free loans? Was that even a thing back then?
It wasn't exactly common, but it reflects that kind of heart transformation that Ezekiel was talking about. You know, back then, loans were often a lifeline for people who were struggling to survive.
Yeah.
And charging interest could really trap them in this cycle of debt. So offering loans without interest was a really compassionate act. You know, it was putting the needs of others before profit.
So it's not just about following the letter of the law, but understanding, like, the spirit behind it.
Exactly.
The heart of compassion that motivates those actions.
Precisely. And that's a key takeaway for us today, too. I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in the do's and don'ts of religion or even just, you know, everyday morality.
Yeah.
But Ezekiel is reminding us that true righteousness, it goes deeper than that. It's about cultivating a heart that's aligned with God's values.
Values like?
Values like justice, mercy, and compassion.
So it's not about, you know, gritting your teeth and white knuckling your way through doing the quote unquote right thing because you're afraid of being punished.
Exactly. It's about this genuine desire to do what's pleasing to God, not out of fear, but because your heart is truly in alignment with his values. Those actions just become an expression of who you are, not something you have to check off a list.
So it's less about like, I should do this, and more about this feels right. This is who I want to be.
Exactly. There's this shift from external pressure to internal motivation. And that's a huge sign of a transformed heart.
That makes a lot of sense. But what about, you know, the times when we still struggle? You know, those old patterns come back up and we find ourselves reaching for those sour grapes again, even though we're like, we're trying to live differently. Does that mean the new heart is failing?
Not necessarily. Remember, transformation is a process.
Right.
We're human. We're going to mess up. But here's the key difference. With a new heart, you have a deeper awareness of the impact of your choices.
So you're more sensitive to like the pain that sin causes, both to yourself and to the people around you.
Yes, and that sensitivity leads to a much more genuine repentance. It's not just about saying, oops, sorry, God, I got caught. You know,
yeah.
It's this heartfelt sorrow for straying from what you know is right and a desire to, you know, repair the relationship.
So it's like the difference between cleaning up a mess because you don't want to get in trouble versus cleaning it up because you actually regret making the mess in the first place.
Exactly. You see that shift reflected in the way someone approaches making things right. They're not just trying to get out of trouble. They're actually seeking reconciliation, both with God and with the people that they might have hurt.
Okay, so this new heart, it's not just about individual change. It, like, affects our relationships, too.
Totally.
It's like those ripples that spread out from a stone dropped in the water, you know?
Absolutely. Think about it. When you've experienced that depths of God's forgiveness and grace, you're much more likely to extend that same grace to other people. It changes how you see people, how you respond to their, you know, shortcomings.
It's like that saying, hurt people, but healed people, heal people.
Yes, that's perfect. And this is where Ezekiel's emphasis on justice and compassion really comes to life. You start to see those actions, feeding the hungry, caring for the vulnerable, offering help without expecting anything in return. They just become these natural outpourings of that inner transformation.
So it's not just about avoiding the quote unquote bad stuff. It's about actually pursuing good. Letting that new heartbeat for others as well as for yourself.
Exactly. And this is what Ezekiel is ultimately pointing us towards. A life that reflects God's character. A life that's in sync with his purposes for the world.
Wow. That's a pretty powerful picture. So if we try to bring this back to today, you know, thousands of years later, What does this actually look like for us? Does this mean we're all supposed to become ancient Israelite prophets running around offering interest-free loans?
Well, the interest-free loan part might not be for everyone, but the core message is the same. You know, it transcends time and culture. It's about understanding that true transformation starts on the inside. It's not about, you know, external pressure or trying to fit into a certain mold. It's about encountering that life-changing grace of God and allowing that grace to reshape your heart.
It's about letting go of those sour grapes, the bitterness of the past, and embracing this new way of living, this new way of being.
Exactly. And as you go about your day, I invite you to consider, you know, what does it mean for you to get yourself a new heart? What areas of your life, your thoughts, your actions, your relationships might need a fresh infusion of God's transforming power?
That's a great question to ponder. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into Ezekiel 18. Thanks for joining us on this journey of exploring ancient wisdom for modern living.
Until next time, may you experience the transformative power of God's grace in every aspect of your life.
Last time we were talking about this idea of a new heart, not just like a one-time thing, but like a, you know, an ongoing process transformation, like we're getting a spiritual heart transplant and God's the surgeon constantly working on us. But how do we even know if the surgery is a success? What are the signs of this new heart actually like beating in our lives?
That's what's so cool about this. Ezekiel gives us like a spiritual EKG. You know, he points to some really concrete signs of what this transformed life looks like in action.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What are these readings? What does a healthy spiritual EKG even look like?
Well, one of the biggest indicators is a change in your attitude towards sin. Remember all those righteous actions we were talking about, like avoiding idolatry, practicing justice, showing compassion?
Right.
When you've got this new heart, those things stop feeling like a burden, you know, like all these rules you got to force yourself to follow.
So it's not about like gritting your teeth and white knuckling your way through doing the right thing just because you're afraid of punishment.
Exactly. There's this genuine desire to do what's pleasing to God, not because you're scared, but because your heart's really lined up with his values. Mm-hmm. It becomes an expression of who you are, not just something on a checklist.
So it's less about, I should do this, and more about, this feels right. This is who I want to be.
Yes, you nailed it. There's this shift from pressure from the outside to motivation on the inside. That's a huge sign.
Makes a lot of sense. But what about, you know, those times when we still mess up? Like when we find ourselves like falling back into old patterns, reaching for those sour grapes again, even when we're trying to live differently. Does that mean the new heart is like failing?
Not at all. Transformation's a journey, right? We're human. We make mistakes. But here's the key difference. With the new heart, you're just more aware of what your choices mean.
Like you're more sensitive to the consequences.
Yeah, to the pain that sin causes, both to yourself and to people around you.
Mm.
And that leads to a real repentance, not just like, oops, my bad, God,
right,
but actual sorrow, you know, wanting to fix things.
It's like the difference between cleaning up a mess so you don't get in trouble and cleaning it up because you genuinely feel bad that you made it in the first place.
Perfect analogy. You really see that shift in how someone tries to make things right. They're not just avoiding consequences. They're looking for reconciliation with God and with anyone they might have hurt.
Okay, so this new heart isn't just about us changing as individuals. It's about, like, our relationships, too.
100%.
It's like that ripple effect, you know, like throwing a stone in the water.
Absolutely. Think about it. When you've really experienced God's forgiveness, his grace, you're more likely to show that to other people, too. It changes how you see them, how you react to their flaws, you know?
It's like that saying, hurt people, but healed people, heal people.
That's it. And this is where Ezekiel's thing about justice and compassion comes alive. All those actions, feeding the hungry, taking care of those in need, offering help without strings attached, they just come naturally from that inner change.
So it's not just about avoiding the so-called bad stuff. It's about actively doing good, letting that new heartbeat for others as well as yourself.
Exactly. And that's what Ezekiel is ultimately pointing us towards, living a life that reflects God's character, a life that's, you know, in tune with his plans for the world.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. But let's be real for a second. If we're trying to bring this, you know, back to today, thousands of years later, what does this look like for us? Are we all supposed to be like ancient Israelite prophets running around offering interest-free loans?
Aha. Well, the loan part, maybe not for everyone, but the main message, it goes beyond time and culture. It's about realizing that real change starts on the inside. It's not about pressure from others or trying to fit into some mold. It's about encountering God's grace and letting it reshape us.
It's about letting go of those sour grapes, the bitterness of the past, and embracing this new way of life, this new way of being.
Exactly.
This has been a really powerful conversation. I think the idea of getting a new heart, a spiritual heart transplant, is something that will stick with me.
Me too.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap up our deep dive into Ezekiel 18. Thanks to everyone out there for joining us, exploring this ancient wisdom and how it applies to us today.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.